Welcome back to the Meetings Podcast. This is Mike, of course, and I wanted to say hello to the new listeners, hello to our old listeners. As you know, if you're a frequent listener, we've had a huge uptick in listenership, and that's been really fun, so we're really happy to have you here. Welcome. Today's show is brought to you by IMEX America. It's a great show if you get a chance to go to the one in Vegas here in the States. And, of course, Frankfurt just happened, and that's a fun one also. But it's also brought to you by my company, Grashak Events and Media. Grashak is where meeting organizers turn to for strategy, creative, and production for meetings and media. You can also turn to Grashak for full-service video production. And now we are producing podcasting for events, which has been quite an adventure and fun. You can check it out, our website at grashakroad.com. We also are offering up a free PDF download if you're interested in starting your own conference podcast by going to grashakroad.com/free consultation. There you can get the PDF has all sorts of information, and it's a do-it-yourself sheet for the equipment and resources and software you need to have your own podcast. So check it out. Today's show features Christy LaMagna. She's from Strategic Meetings and Events, and Christy is a hoot. I really enjoyed speaking with her, and she is also not a good candidate for the Girl Scouts of America, as you will find out as this story or this interview unfolds. So without further ado, let's get into the interview, and I will talk to you afterwards. Thank you for listening, and I do appreciate your time. I will fill in the gaps afterwards. See you then. Welcome back to the Meetings Podcast. This is Mike McCallan with Grashak Events and Media. And today we have Christy LaMagna. Hi, Christy.
Hi, it's very nice to be here, Michael. Thank you.
I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. I know you're very, very busy.
I think we all are, but this is a good use of time, so I appreciate it.
Let me read your little bio. Your great bio, not your little bio. You are the CEO and chief strategic, strategist. Let me start over, Christy.
Sure.
I apologize. No. You are the CEO and chief strategist of Strategic Meetings and Events, which produces mid to large size corporate events worldwide. Having started in the industry 26 years ago, Christy has seen the industry grow and evolve and contributes to teaching and coaching and mentoring others in the field. She has taught strategic planning for 10 years at the college level, writes for numerous industry publications, speaks at conferences, and works with a select group as a professional coach. Christy is writing a textbook for the planning industry, which is expected out at the beginning of 2017. You've been in the industry for 26 years. Did you start when you were like 4 years old?
I love you for saying that. You know what? The truth is, I started planning when I was 2.5. But no, I have been a grown-up paid planner for 26 years.
Wow, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Pretty cool. So let's start out like we do with every show. What's your favorite quote? Or a quote you like? You don't have to say your favorite. Some people don't like favorites, but
a quote that I really like is, if you can only see obstacles, you have taken your eye off the goal. And that's it's a paraphrase of something that Henry Ford said.
Very cool. I'm writing it down. Take us through your career path. How did you, at 4 years old or 2 years old, how did you get started and come up to where lead yourself to where you are now?
Sure. So when I was 2.5, I walked into the kitchen and said to my mom, you can go visit grandma. I can take care of dad. You know, I don't need you anymore. So that didn't go over necessarily very well. It progressed to when I was getting signed up for kindergarten, I took all the kids who were running around the gymnasium and I found them to be just unruly and got everybody together in a circle and organized a game of Duck, Duck, Goose, which I think was my first official event. And then later on in life, my mom got a phone call from the leader of our Girl Scout troop. And she said, you know, Elaine, you need to come and get Christy. And she said, is everything okay? And she said, I really don't think the Girl Scouts is a good place for her. And my mother's like, who's ever gotten thrown out of the Girl Scouts? And my mother said, you know, is she misbehaving? And she said, no, she won't get out of the kitchen. All she wants to do is hang out with the moms and plan the meeting. She doesn't want to hang out with the kids. And I didn't. I didn't want to hang out with the kids. I wanted to hang out with the adults and talk about how we could, you know, what we could do for our next badge. Oh, shoot. I had this turned off. It is off.
That's okay. Mine's on, too. It just went off right before.
Oh, but you know what? My ringer, isn't that? Oh, I turned the, sorry, hold on.
No worries.
I turned the handset off. The main thing is on. Sorry.
It shows how busy you are. It's perfect.
Sorry about that. So, yeah, I was asked to leave the Girl Scouts because I wasn't a Girl Scout. I wanted to be a Girl Scout leader.
So, is that a true story?
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely a true story.
How funny.
Oh, yeah. And it wasn't funny at the time. My mother was mortified. I got into Catholic school girl who gets, you know, kicked out of the Girl Scouts. It was not fun. I was thrilled because I didn't want to be there. But no, it wasn't funny at the time. It was, you know, shame on the family. So I went to college thinking that I was going to teach. I fell in love with journalism when I was in high school. I went to college and ended up being the editor of my college paper for 3 years. And I left with just such a burning desire to be a part of the journalism world. Through college, I had a summer job that turned into my first full-time job after I graduated, which was public relations for a hospital. And I was able to write about, give the hospital some PR. And the only way to do that was to create events that I could then write about. So we would have flu shots, cancer screenings, you know, all kinds of health clinics, but I would have to run them. I was able to promote them. Then I ran them. And then I post show would do another press release or, you know, a wrap up story. And what I realized was that I liked planning the events just as much as I liked writing about them. But the rush of planning them was just so much more exciting to me than the writing piece. So I volunteered for a layoff. Because I was in my early 20s, I didn't care. Went back to school and got my master's in communications and mass media. And through that, ended up working for a gentleman who, interestingly enough, as a planner, had attention deficit disorder. So he would sit in meetings and promise clients crazy things and forget that he said them. And then after the meeting, I would say to him, but how are we going to get the Goodyear blimp to fly over this company picnic? And he would say, well, I didn't say that. No, but she did. So
oh my God.
It was fascinating. So I kind of just followed him around and cleaned up and tried to make what he said actually happen and ended up going to a temp agency saying, I would like to work for, do you place in publishing companies? And I'll take any job. I just want to be in publishing. And I knew that I wanted to do events, but I wanted to be in journalism. I thought by planning for a publishing company, I could kind of be around the print world, but still do what I wanted to do. And I ended up getting a job as a receptionist. And on day three, I handed the office manager my resume and I said, please read this and stop treating me like I'm stupid. And she didn't know quite what to do with me. But 2 days later, they made me their marketing person. And it was a startup. So they didn't know anything about trade shows. Honestly, I didn't know anything about trade shows. And I pretty much figured it all out and started doing their trade shows, their events. And we launched 3 publications together and the rest is history.
Wow.
So yeah. And I still write. So I still get to do events and I still get to be in journalism and I get to do cool things on, you know, with people like you for podcasts. So it's kind of the best of all worlds for me.
And that's Strategic Events?
Strategic Meetings and Events was formed 15 years ago this year. We're having our 15-year anniversary. After I left a corporate job, I was out in Silicon Valley and the tech bubble burst and then 9/11 happened. And I actually once again volunteered for layoff. They're strategically, if you can afford to do it, fantastic ways to exit a company, usually get a package, start over with some money in the bank. For me, it's been a phenomenal, it's a great opportunity to let someone else who has a family and children keep their job. And I get a fresh start and they underwrite whatever the next step of my education is going to be because I take that money and invest it in my next step. So I decided I didn't need a corporation to do what I do. I formed Strategic Meetings and Events in my dining room and it's 15 years later and here we still are. So it's been wonderful. Yeah, it's been pretty fantastic.
What's been the biggest challenge you've encountered starting it up?
You know, the biggest challenge that I faced that I think the industry faces, and it's actually a big part of what I'm going to be doing in, you know, Christy 3.0, is that many of us meet someone who's outside the industry and they say, what do you do for a living? And you say, I'm an event planner, which is now why I say I'm an event strategist, and they don't know what that is. So I say I plan events for a living. And the inevitable next sentence is, you know, one of three predictable things. Oh, you're so lucky you get to plan parties for a living. Do you need help? Can you put me in your suitcase? Or the one that sets my teeth on fire is, oh my gosh, you know, I planned, and then insert, you know, meaningless personal event here, you know, my son's 7th birthday party, you know, my niece's bridal shower. I'm thinking of opening a business and becoming an event planner. And what I've now started to say is, oh my gosh, that's so interesting. Let me ask you, did you cook dinner last night? And I said, well, yes. And I said, are you going to open a restaurant too? And, you know, they kind of look at you and it's like, well, I don't want to be offensive. And I say this to whomever it is I'm speaking to. I don't mean to offend you, but for you to imagine that because you've done this once or twice socially, that what I do for a living is something that you can just pick up and run with. I said, is actually very personally offensive. I've dedicated my life to this and there is more to it than blowing up balloons. So what I have found the most challenging thing is that if you're passionate and dedicated and really interested in doing something well, to have pretty much everyone around you just take it as a blow off career and something that, you know, anyone can do and that really doesn't deserve a whole lot of respect. It's that for me, especially when I was a young, you know, short, I'm 5'2", so I was young, blonde and female. And, you know, people, when you're that age, don't necessarily take you seriously to begin with. And then you're in a profession that people think, you know, again, you count coffee cups and cut bagels for a living. It was really difficult to be taken seriously and to have my clients, when I was, you know, searching for initial business, to have someone say to me, well, you know, my admin plans are all our events. And to them, that was, you know, why do you need me? Because, or a planner of any type, because anybody can do it. My assistant does it. So why would I need to pay you? And it's very difficult to try and educate the world at large, you know, one person at a time, on why having a professional do this actually benefits you and can save you money. So I would say that was and continues to be a big challenge for me, and I think for many people in the industry.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I told you before we started that I just finished interviewing David Adler, and he was saying, like, just what you just said is, like, it's very frustrating for that, but his goal now is to make these event organizers like yourself to become more of a rock star or a celebrity in a way, like chefs are. He said chefs used to be the people in the back, just people would think they're in the back cutting carrots, mm-hmm. right? Now they're known as celebrities, and his goal is to make people understand what a rock star like someone like yourself is and what you really do. Mm-hmm. Kind of interesting. It's just right along the same lines. I think there is a shifting in the industry itself. Mm-hmm. Of course, we all know of event organizers who are, you know, logistical people, basically. That's all they do.
Right.
You know,
right. And in some instances, that's because no one's taught them otherwise.
Right. And it is an interesting kind of dynamic of how things are changing, I think, is to look at things more as, you know, to be that person in that, you know, I've been in lots of these meetings where we're sitting with all the executives and the meeting planner is just basically taking notes and not, you know, kind of talking about, hey, what we really want to do here, you know, what's the action they want those people to walk out the door with, and how are we going to make them do that, basically.
Right. And that's why, I mean, the word strategic now, you know, in 2016 is, you know, fairly common. 15 years ago, it wasn't. And, you know, the company is called Strategic Meetings and Events because if you call me and say, you know, I want you to plan my company's holiday party, I'm going to say no, thank you. If you call me and say, you know, I'd like for you to come in and talk to me about planning my corporate sales meeting, and I sit with you, the first question I ask you is, tell me what your goal is. And if you don't know the answer, we can't continue the conversation until we establish what that is. And, you know, most people don't have a clue as to what you're talking about. What's my goal? It's a sales meeting.
That's awesome. That is really awesome. And that's what I think every meeting organizer should be doing. I mean,
yeah,
so
agreed.
Right.
Agreed.
What's my next question? I am going to ask you, What do you have like I try to ask questions of people about like what, you know, successful people like yourself, you know, like nuggets to find out what so other people might be able to emulate. And some of these questions might be strange, but anyway. So what, like, do you have a typical day? Do you have any normal morning rituals, food, exercise, reading things? Do you read you know, like special websites or social media sites, news sites? Just trying to figure out, you know, if you have habits or rituals that other people might copy or might
sure.
be interesting.
Sure. So one of the things that I believe is I read just about anything I can get my hands on. And I always have my nose in, it's funny because I cannot be monogamous to a book. So I have four or five books going at any given point in time. And what's funny is I just said to someone the other day, I think God gave us two eyes. So it frustrates me because I think God gave us two eyes so that we could read one book out of each of them, but I haven't figured out how to do that yet. Because I had two books and wanted to read them both at the same time. I'm like, I have two eyes. I should be able to read two books. So one of the things that I do when I get up in the morning is I give myself a half an hour. One of my rules is I will not check email at all until 9 o'clock unless it's an extenuating circumstance that I'm running into the city and I'm not going to be at my desk all day. But I give myself permission in the morning so if I'm up at 6, I've got 3 hours. If I get up at 8, I've only got an hour. So that motivates me to get out of bed. And I can read anything it is that I want. I exercise. I do, I see a nutritionist who's given me some fabulous, protein shakes that I am religious about. And I allow myself to read whatever it is that makes me happy, for probably half an hour to 45 minutes. And that to me, it refreshes my brain. It gets me excited. It oftentimes inspires me to make a phone call, write an article, or it just puts me at peace and I feel like I can conquer the rest of the day.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And I need to back up a little bit too on this thing. Sure. So can you, I know you, in your bio, it said that you're writing a textbook right now. Is that, can you tell a little bit about what you do? I'm sorry, I should have said this right away, but what you do, you know, what are you working on right now? Is it the textbook? You sound like you're always writing articles and things if you're, so take us through basically what you do.
So when I started, I was planning meetings, when I started strategic meetings and events, and it graduated to I ran the company because, you know, someone much smarter than me once said, you know, you can't work on the company if you're in the company. So I pulled myself out of events so that I could run the organization and kept one event a year just to keep my skills sharp. And that ultimately turned into me. I even passed that event on. So right now I run our company. And what that involves is, you know, all of our meetings, the meetings, the contracts, the strategic plan. I go out and attract new business. I do all of our marketing. So what I will do is if I'm going to meet with you, I had touched on this briefly before. If I come in, I don't bring a PowerPoint. I'm not a big fan of, you know, PowerPoint presentations. And I was at a meeting once and I was actually pitching for a piece of business. And the guy who brought me in said, you're not going to get this business. We know who we're going to use. But I think they need to meet you because eventually we'll be serious about finding a new vendor and I'd like my boss to know who you are. So I didn't walk in there imagining that there was a chance that I wouldn't get the business. I was going to get this business even though they told me I couldn't. And I said, my only request is, can I be the first person who pitches to you? So he said, sure. And I walked in and it was a trip to Venice and I brought in Italian pastries and, you know, it was a very Italian themed kind of meeting or, you know, interview. And the woman who walked me into the office, the boardroom said, you know, if you give me your laptop, I'll hook you everything up for your presentation. And I said, you know, I didn't bring a laptop. I don't have a presentation. And she like, balked at that. So then everyone comes into the office and I said, you know, if you don't mind, I'd like to just start with a quick story. And the woman's name was Barbara. I said, Barbara, I hope you don't mind that you're part of my story. I said, so, when Barbara found out that I didn't have a laptop to hook up and there was no PowerPoint presentation, she seemed truly concerned. But here's my thinking. You already know what Venice looks like. this is about relationships and creating experiences and creating a strategic partnership, because I'm going to help you achieve your goals and ultimately let events be able to support your bottom line. So what I would say to you respectfully is, anyone who comes in here and turns off, if you've given someone the opportunity to meet with you and build a relationship with you, because that's what this 45 minutes is about, if they turn off the lights and show you pictures, they have missed the fundamental principle of what it is that you want to have done. So what was fun was, I kind of planted a landmine because I knew everybody else was going to bring in a PowerPoint. So everybody else showed up and then stepped on this landmine that I left for them.
Brilliant.
It was fantastic. So, and I mean, I believed what I was saying, but I didn't, you know, I purposely did it to also then undermine all my competition. And the gentleman who initially invited me called me and he said, "My boss is furious." And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Because he knows that he has to hire you and it infuriates him that, you know," it was the funniest thing. So, everything that I do when I meet with people is I sit them down and say, you know, let's say, you know, Mike, you've got two partners. And I say, what's your goal? I make sure the three people or the key decision makers are in that room. And I say to them, we need to write down what the goal is. I don't want you to tell me. I want everyone to write it down on a piece of paper. And I get a lot of eye rolling and then this is silly. We all know. And I'm like, just do me a favor. I'm a little quirky. Just write this down for me. And then I make them hand me the paper, because if you're the CEO and you read your answer, you know, we either self-censor or get intimidated and then don't speak our mind. And I read all three answers and inevitably I've got three different opinions. And I say, so if we don't, as the three key decision makers for the event, don't have a clear vision, how am I possibly going to help you plan this thing? So I take my clients through this whole process. So that's a big part of my job, is I get everything to the point where it's, the vision has been strategically aligned. Then we go out to the attendees or the target audience and say, top, the middle, and the lowest level performers, and say, what is it that you need out of either this year's sales conference, this incentive trip? What are you hoping to get? Because if your audience is looking for something from you that you're not giving them, and you both have the same shared goal of we want to sell more, but you're approaching it from we think we need a new software system, and they're saying we think we need more FaceTime with our executives and more training, they go to the sales meeting, they don't get what they need, they leave frustrated. You've spent all this money, you've given all this energy, they leave angry, you think they're ungrateful. I mean, and this is the way companies run.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So I spend a lot of time, I do the heavy lifting, and then once we all have a vision, I hand it off to the people who work with me and say, okay, now you guys go figure out, you know, the rest of it, and then I step aside. And the only other piece is that I really stay in on a very regular basis is I love negotiating contracts. Which is, oh my gosh, it's one of my favorite things to do. And I will always look at the budgets. So those are the things from a, you know, meeting planning industry perspective that I do. And then the rest of it is I do a lot of marketing and writing and supporting of the industry. So what I love about my day is I wear 9 or 10 hats every day, and it just makes me very happy because I get bored very quickly. And if I'm bored, I get cranky. So nobody likes me when I'm cranky.
So do you do that with your clients after, do you go back after the event? Is that part of your process then to see if you did attain those goals? Because I'm assuming you keep these clients year after year.
Yeah, we do. It's wonderful. So what I do is I say to, again, these key stakeholders, and you kind of referenced this a little bit before. I said, what do you want your audience thinking, saying, and doing after they leave this meeting? Because everything that I do is going to help you achieve that goal, from the meeting setup to the location to the dates to the room configurations. It's all going to help that goal be achieved. And the other thing is, this isn't a magic bullet. We're not going to create a theme, do a 3-day or a 5-day really intensive meeting. You know, every time you walk in, you see the logo, there's the music, there's the t-shirts, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, after the meeting is over, everything goes back to business as usual. So I want to create with you a year-long strategy leading up to the meeting as well as after the meeting, because you need to live this. This can't be a few days of messaging and then you go away. So we do 3, 6, 9, and 12 point benchmarks. So yeah, I meet with these folks after the meeting and say, so, you know, how do we do? And then we reach out to the audience and we get a lot of feedback. So yeah, I like to keep it. a year-long process. Some clients take me up on that. Some don't. Mm-hmm. The ones who do, you know, have a much better result.
And probably better clients.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. Smart clients are the best clients.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. awesome. Awesome, mm-hmm. awesome.
Yeah.
Was there a moment that you knew you made the right decision in this career?
Yeah, you know what? I get bored very easily. Mm-hmm. I believe that if whatever you're doing, if it's 5 o'clock and you can stop what you're doing, shut out the light and walk away, you know, it couldn't have been that important. So when I stood, I had a huge meeting back in the, I guess, early 2000s, and we had come up with this concept, and it took us a year to plan this meeting. And it was every Friday, all day, we had a think tank. And when we stood in the back of this room and people walked in and the oohs and the ahs and the, like, you literally saw this amazing thing that you just kind of dreamed in your mind and then you gave birth to it. It was, to this day, the most spectacular part of a program that I've ever had. And it was, you know, how the, you know, it's in philosophy, it's referred to as the good. You know, Plato says when you achieve the good, that for me was the professional equivalent of achieving the good. And I knew that I was in the right place.
That's awesome. I have a similar thing that happened to be one of my very first events that I was on.
Really?
Yeah, it was a really, and it washed over me. I was with my client. We were actually had our arms around each other. Like I had my hand over his shoulder, and I basically felt like crying. I was like, had to hold back because that would have looked funny. But it was that same moment of like, holy crap, this is great.
Yeah. It literally overcomes you. It's a beautiful feeling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what's your vision for the future? How do you see, your business evolving and how do you feel about it?
So my business, actually is we intentionally keep, a limit to the amount of clients that we take. So whereas we will expand, we always expand in a very controlled environment. I love to tell a story. If I'm meeting with a potential client, I will say, you know, we get to know our group very well. One of our clients lives in the same town as one of the planners. And she noticed on the phone that some weeks on her weekly calls with him, he paid attention. And other weeks, she knew that this guy was a million miles away. So she finally asked some probing questions and comes to find out that the guy's son is on a lacrosse team. And on the days that he wasn't paying attention, he was checking the stats of the team that the son was playing against. And he was thinking about lacrosse. So this woman downloads the kid's lacrosse schedule and then starts planning the meetings around the lacrosse schedule so that she won't slam into his schedule. Then she comes to find out that the client has jury duty 1 week. And she's driving, I don't know where she was going, and drives past his house and sees that his car is still in his driveway. And she texts him and says, "You're supposed to be at jury duty." And he calls her. He's like, "Oh, my God, I forgot. Thank you so much."
Oh, my God. Wow.
So whereas, you know, that's not the way it works all the time. We do take.
Yeah, it could get a little weird, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, you can't pay that close attention to anything. You know, with multiple people, it's, you know, you really have to be pretty dedicated
right. To
one person. I can't say that you're the only client I'm working with and then have my attention. I can't treat six people as if they're the only people that I'm working with.
Right.
So I limit how many clients each of my strategists work with. And I also make sure that if I'm working with you on your sales meeting, I may not work with you on your incentive trip. Or if there's a different person in your company who's doing the incentive, I may not be that person because I also match personalities with events. So you may work with me for one, or, you know, someone from my team from one event, a different person from the team for a different event, because it's a lot about personalities.
Sure.
So for me, the organization is going to get bigger, and my goal is to spend a lot more time now writing, speaking, mentoring, coaching, and kind of letting other people start to really take over the business and grow it while I go do, I think, you know, Christy 3.0, which is going to be a lot more supporting the industry and helping it, the future of the industry becoming more strategic and less logistic or fly by night. And really, it's been 26 years. The industry has been good to me. I really want to leave it better than I found it. And I know what it needs and I know how to do it. I just need to have the time. So that's my next thing. That's my future.
Very cool.
Yeah. Casual little goal that I'll do in my free time.
What are you struggling with anything with this personally or professionally?
Oh God. Yeah. So what frustrates me is that no matter how many people I coach or help or how much I try and do, there's just so much more, and it's impossible. You know, everybody says they can't get it all done, but I just look at it from all the potential that there is of all the things that could be done. So I want to write this textbook. I want to speak. I want to do. I have so many things that I want to accomplish that I will overschedule a day. And some mornings I wake up and say, I'm going to make someone angry today. I don't know who it's going to be, and I don't know what it is that I'm going to do, but someone's going to be frustrated that I couldn't stay on a call long enough. They didn't get enough of my time. I couldn't get something to them. I've gotten myself to the point where I am so overstretched that, you know, at this point it's, I'm going to annoy somebody today and I'm not sure who it's going to be, but you know, as long as I know that in advance, I guess I won't be too let down when it happens. So yeah, what I'm struggling with right now is I just can't figure out how to get it all done. And it's partially because I just have too much I want to do. I read 5 books at a time. So I just, you know, I tend to have a very active mind, and it takes, you know, I overschedule myself, be it for the reading that I'm doing or what I need to do during the day.
Yeah, you need to learn to say no.
I do. And I've started, and you know what? I work with a coach who has taught me never say no, always say yes, and then offer options. So it's, smart. Yes, yeah. I can do that for you. Would you like, you know, are you good with, because you may call me and say, you know, hey, I need to talk to you today. And I'm saying, I'd love to talk to you. Is next Tuesday or Wednesday better? And you may self-select out.
Yeah.
I can't wait that long. In which case you go away. I don't have to feel bad. Everybody wins.
Yeah.
So for people like me who don't like to say no, that little piece of advice was very freeing, because it was, I always get to say yes, and it may still go away anyway. And you won't be angry if I say to you, we can talk next Wednesday or Tuesday or Wednesday, because now you know what the timeline is. So, yeah.
Very cool. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions that are kind of fun questions, but it's kind of, I'm trying to pull out, you know, some nuggets from successful people that other people might be able to emulate or learn from. And,
sure.
And me too. I want to learn.
Me too.
So, first question, do you have any rituals that you do that you think help? Some people say meditating or, you know, exercise, food. What kind of sites do you go to on a regular basis to read? You know, that kind of thing.
Sure. I'm a firm believer in exercise. I think that for me, it clears my mind, and I like starting my day knowing that the hardest part about my day is over before I even sit at my desk. I am a big fan of this protein shake that my nutritionist adjusts based on my schedule and where my body is at any given point in time. It's something that is highly specialized, which is wonderful. She's a chemical engineer, so she looks at what my schedule is and what my body is telling me at any given point in time and adjusts the shakes ingredients to that. I am such a journalism lover. It's funny that you know, you're saying, what sites do you go to? I know, you know, 50 sites, and you know, that's the sum total of my existence. I'm a big paper girl. It's funny. I'm not interested. I don't like to read online. So I will, Wall Street Journal every morning. I'm a big fan of, I'll flip through the news stations, but in terms of, honestly, if I'm going to get industry news, more likely than not, I'm getting it from a print publication. I do read the news feeds online, but more likely than not, I'm going to go to print media. I wish I could say there's a site that I can't live without, but I'm such a print girl. I'm sorry to disappoint you. I can't be helpful there.
What are the print ones that you go for?
I like to read Smart Meetings. It's a funny story very quickly. Apparently someone has started ordering the Wall Street Journal, but the gentleman who delivers it thinks it was me, and it's not. So for the last 6 months, no kidding, I have gotten the Wall Street Journal at my driveway every morning, And I've even walked out and waited for the guy and said, I didn't order this. And he says, I deliver what they tell me, lady. And it's fantastic. I read everything from, you know, Entrepreneur Magazine to Vanity Fair to Forbes. I love, for instance, when my car needs to get fixed, because I will sit at the BMW dealership and they'll have magazines that, you know, they have Bloomberg Business Week, and then I'll start reading that. So, I mean, I am just, everyone who knows me will give me their magazines, because there's so much I don't know that, you know, and I have to read, when I go to get my haircut, I read People magazine, because someone will say, oh, you know, such and such a show or such and such a star. I'm not great with, so, you know, pop culture. Mm-hmm. So I read that simply to understand, you know, who's famous these days.
Right,
so,
right.
But yeah, I'm a Bloomberg Business Week, Inc., Entrepreneur, Money Magazine, because the event planning is about diet. It's about contracts. It's about budget management. It's about strategy, communication, socializing, social media. Any magazine that's there strategically has something to do with what we do for a living. So anything I read is an investment in my clients and my business.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I wondered, so that's what your ritual is, reading basically.
Yeah.
And protein drinks.
And exercising.
And exercising. What do you do to exercise?
You know, it's funny. I was running, mm-hmm. and the best thing about running is not running. So yes, the best part of running is stopping. And my nutritionist, interestingly, said so this is something that people in our industry who are, people have said to me, you know, there's type A personality. They say to me, you're triple A. Okay. So for people who are type A, double A, or triple A personalities, we are so driven and we're so busy that sometimes exercising is actually the worst thing that we can do, because our adrenal glands are so pinned open that by exercising, we only make it worse. So what I learned was that I can't go out and run 13 miles three times a week, because it's actually bad for my health. So I've learned to do things like a bar class, which is insanely difficult, but it doesn't get your heart rate up as much, and it doesn't agitate my adrenal gland, which allows me to sleep better. It gives me more peace of mind, and it just it allows me to be healthier. So that would be the advice that I would give AAA personalities. If you're also an exercise junkie, because I'll go to the gym for 3 hours, it can be really bad for you.
Huh. What's a bar class?
A bar class. It's kind of
I pictured sitting at a bar doing.
I know. Isn't that fabulous?
12-ounce curls with beers.
Yeah, so 12-ounce curls. A bar class is something that is on the East Coast. It's kind of ballet meets yoga meets some type of Guantanamo Bay torture. All in one room, and you pay for it. It's fantastic. It's miserable. It's absolutely miserable.
That's fantastic. That's so funny. Okay, and then that's great. Okay, so then you know what I wanted to ask you too, which of course I'm out of sync on this interview. Sorry, I apologize. But tell me about the American Express ad that you were in, because that's on your LinkedIn. People can check it out if they want to go to your LinkedIn page. But Tell the story about that, because I wondered how you got involved with that.
Sure.
So they did a vignette on you, basically, in your American Express. That's the lead in. So how did you get that?
So what I think, if this is actually one of the perfect questions to almost end on, is because this pretty much is, I think, my philosophy of life and the essence of my personality. So again, it goes back to publishing. I got a beautiful marketing piece in the mail. And I was intrigued by the quality of the paper and the way it was presented. So I read it and I'm looking at this. I'm also incredibly competitive, predominantly with myself. But so I'm looking at this and I'm saying, well, they spent a fortune on this. But these people are, you know, this one guy is featured because he downloads his statement to an Excel spreadsheet. Yawn. Then somebody else used her card and the feature of not having to pay the balance for 6 months to go out and buy a stove for her bakery. Okay, double yawn. So I'm looking at this saying they spent a whole lot of time profiling people who really aren't that interesting. So the back page said, tell us your story. And that's all it said. And it had an email address. And that was on a Sunday. So Monday morning, I bring this brochure up to my office, and I typed this woman an email and said, read your brochure, beautiful job. these guys, really not that impressive. I'm giving you permission. Go look up my account. I am interesting. I've bought everything from on my American Express card from camels to cadavers. And with my Plum card, which is a business card that you have to qualify to receive, but they get the initial offering, and I'm part of the grandfather piece, is you get 2% back. So I said to her, I'm at over $150,000 that American Express has given me as 2% back. So clearly I used the card. You need to meet me. And I sent it off and kind of chuckled to myself and said, you know what? You never know. And the next day they reached out to me, and I see American Express come up on my phone. I'm like, holy cow. So I pick up the phone and she's like, you know, hi, Christy, this is so-and-so. We looked you up, and I'm thinking to myself, holy crap. Like, it's amazing when you say something and people actually take you seriously. So she said, you know, we looked into your account, and you know what? You are interesting, and we would love to work with you. It's like, oh my gosh. So I had to jump through some hoops and, you know, do a couple interviews and give them a couple writing samples. And then they called me and said, we need a customer service story. And at the end of this process, whoever we choose, we're going to do a video about them. And I'm thinking, I don't have a great customer service story, but I know there's a video at the end of this. So I send them back this email saying, well, as a customer for 20 years, it's hard to narrow it down to just one thing. And I don't answer the question at all. And they get back to me and they say, this is exactly what we wanted. And I'm thinking, well, you asked me to cook you dinner and I made you breakfast. So I don't know how this could be what you wanted, because I didn't answer your question. And they said, we're sending a video crew out to you for 3 days, the first week of January, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so the next thing I knew, I had these guys calling me, this whole production crew, and we found our locations and they followed me around Manhattan and they they shot this video. So I got to script the whole thing. I mean, all of that is pretty much extemporaneous speaking, and I'm actually looking at a candlestick in my dining room that's what I'm talking to. And they shot this video, and now it's up, and they use it for trainings. The CEO of American Express Open uses it at town halls. They use it at trade shows. I've had people come up to me and said, you're the American Express girl. I mean, it's the craziest thing. And Mike, all I did, and this is why I said it's kind of like my philosophy, it didn't occur to me that I could fail. And all I had to do was ask. So, you know, we oftentimes create this image of people, well, I could never do this, and look at what this one did. And, you know, we write stories in our heads about how things happen to other people, and that self-limits us. All I did was say, what do I have to lose? And then I asked for something that I wanted, and here I am. So, you know, it's very empowering if you give yourself permission to go for what you want and just try. And a whole lot of life is just showing up. And I was the one who raised my hand.
That's great.
So I wish I could tell you. Yeah, I wish I could tell you, you know, they read an article and I inspired them, and, you know, it was had something to do with me. Not really. It just kind of had something to do with my big mouth. So
that's great.
It's kind of fun.
Yeah. No, it's a great story. Wow.
Yeah. So, and I've now parlayed it into, I've come to them with a business plan saying, here are all the other things that you should have me do for you. So, you know, they wanted a glass of water and I'm hitting them with a fire hose, but,
for you. Well, yeah, hustle makes it happen. That's great.
You never know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's a great story. But we're not ending with that. We're going to go, we're going to ask a few more questions. So you say about these books, what books are you reading right now?
Oh my gosh. So I always carry around a copy of a book called The War of Art. And most people have heard of The Art of War. This is called The War of Art, and it's by Steve Pressfield. Mm-hmm. And it's a very, very small book. It's a pocket book. And I carry it with me all the time. And it talks about resistance and how our inner muse, and that we are all capable of so much, and that resistance is incredibly powerful, and all the compelling reasons we have to not do the things that we were destined to do. And I carry it with me. And if I'm meeting someone for lunch and they're 5 minutes late, I pull it out, I read a page. So The War of Art goes with me everywhere. I'm reading I'm just about done with a fantastic novel called Black Chalk, which is just, it's unlike anything I've ever read. It's a great mind game book. So that's called Black Chalk. I'm reading Eat That Frog, which is about doing the hardest thing first in the morning so that it's not hanging over your head, and that in doing that, you will become a much more productive person. And I'm reading Blink by Malcolm Gladwell. So those are my go-tos right now. Okay. Oh, and actually a Rwandan phrase book, because I'm trying to learn how to speak a bit of Rwandan before I go on a mission trip in July. So that's, I think, the kookiest of all the things that are on my nightstand right now.
What is it? Rwanda what?
A Rwandan phrase book. So I'm going to Rwanda, and it's fair to say, you know, it's not a language that I've ever dabbled in, and I've got a lot of learning to do. And perhaps on the 30-hour, you know, flight or, you know, commute day, I will.
What are you going there for? You said a mission? What is that?
Yeah, you know, I have become very interested in giving back, not just on a professional level, but on a personal level. So I sit on a board of directors for a village in Rwanda that educates children and the children of who were victims of genocide. And you're obviously much more passionate about something if you have experienced it. And I got involved in this based on a friend's request. But I'm going to go and stay in the village for just about 2 weeks and actually bring some of my meeting planning skills to the village and teach the people there, the faculty, how to create systems and how to kind of put an infrastructure in place, and then teach some of the students who have graduated and who are in their extra year some networking and jobs research skills and just some entrepreneurial tips. So I'm going to be there teaching their faculty as well as their students and learning more than I could probably even imagine in, you know, being in this third world country for 2 weeks.
What's the name of this? What is it called? What
are you? The easy way is ASYV. It stands for Agahozo Shalom Youth Village. And it's interestingly, it's a Jewish organization. I'm not Jewish. A woman had seen what was going on in Rwanda, and it really struck a chord with her, you know, based on what happened in the Holocaust. So she started this organization. So these Jewish folks went to a Catholic country and started this village, and it's a high school, and it's got 500 kids, and it's been going for quite a few years, and it's amazing what they're doing. So I support actively. I limit it to 12 organizations that I donate time, money, and talent to. And this one is it's kind of the biggest one on my plate right now, in that I've made the commitment to go there and, you know, do some teaching.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. And it's, again, I get bored when I'm not doing something interesting. So this qualifies as my latest "What are you doing now?" story. Yeah. Never done.
I wanted to say, too, that The War of Art is next to my bed also.
Oh, you're kidding.
I carry it with me all the time, but I love that book.
Oh, my gosh. I love that you know that book.
Yeah. And actually, I think the one who gave me that was that client that I had my arm around that I was telling you about earlier.
Really?
Yeah. His name is Eday 10 Wedges is his name. He's works for Siemens, and he's in Germany. Oh. He's a German. But it was, that's funny. He's just a great guy. But anyway, that's funny that you've said that book. I wanted to.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And you know what? I buy 12 of them at a time and I give them out to people.
That was going to be my next question. What book do you gift others?
Oh my gosh. I gift all the time. I give that book out. I follow him.
That's a great book. Yeah. It's very inspiring.
It's such a gift. You know, even if you only get a little of it, you know, it can be life changing.
Okay, so we are winding down here to the end of this, because I know you have stuff to do today too.
I don't have a lot of opinions and I'm hard to talk to. So
yes, I've noticed that. This has been very difficult. I just want this to end because it's so hard. It's like pulling teeth. What's your favorite? Do you have a favorite documentary or movie you've seen recently, or old one?
Oh gosh, my favorite movie is not a documentary, and it's this little known, I think it's little known, it's called Somewhere in Time, which is a typical, like, you know, weepy girl romance chick flick that had Christopher Reeve in it, that is, but it goes back to, if you want something hard enough, you will figure out how to get it. And it's a movie about time travel, and it's a beautiful story with a tragic ending, but it's about a guy and he overcomes some pretty amazing odds to get what he wants, temporarily at least. So,
very cool. Do you watch the Outlander show?
I do not.
Huh, maybe you like that.
Okay, I'll have to write that.
It's time travel and stuff. Anyway.
Oh.
So it's a book that a book my wife read actually, but then it's a show now on TV. I've been watching it with her. It's pretty good. Anyway, that's totally not what you were talking about. and then I have so many different questions I wanted to ask you, but let's ask these. What's the best advice you've ever received?
Don't take yourself so seriously. Get out of your own way. Good. I've had people tell me that. I mean, even as a kid, it's funny. You know, some people would say, what did you want to be when you grew up? And I would always say an adult. And I, for a huge part of my life and still at times take myself too seriously. And that's very self-limiting. And it just is, oh my gosh, it's such a sin and it's so unnecessary.
That's great.
Yeah. Get out of your own way. And it was Clinton.
Limiting is such a great phrase about that because it is true.
It is. And Bill Clinton once said, the deepest wounds that we face in life are usually self-inflicted. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's, yeah, we need to get out of our own way.
Very cool. Yeah, sorry, I was jotting that down. I'm running furiously as you're talking. So is there something that's working for you right now? Do you have a new app, new vitamin exercise program? You've kind of already said that you are on these protein shakes, but anything helping you, like work hack, time saver, something that's all of a sudden you're like, wow, this is great. I wish I had known this 50 years ago or when I was four when I started this or two.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I have done also, which is very in addition to the always say yes and give options, is I turned off the alerts for my email so that I don't get the little pop-up box. I don't get a ding. I get nothing. And I only have my system set to check email every 25 minutes. And I'm very, you know, I'm trying to become much more regimented about not immediately responding to things. And it's very freeing. It's very, very freeing.
That is such a great tip. Because I hate that, and I have that on all the time. And as I'm sitting here talking to you, it'll pop up, and you look at it, and you're like, oh.
Yep.
It's so.
Yeah.
Wow. Great, great tip. That's a great tip. So turn off the alerts. And so you said you're to look, go get email every 20 minutes.
Yeah, I go every 25 minutes, but you can schedule it for whatever you like. Some people I read will say, you know, I only check email at 9 in the morning and 3 in the afternoon. You know, I don't have that. I can't do that. But to not have it pop up all the time, because it just feels like you're constantly, every time you see an email, it's, I'm running behind. And whoever it is who sent you something, that's, you know, their crisis is not necessarily yours. And it immediately, at least for me, makes me feel like I'm beholden to someone. So if I don't see it, it can't bother me.
And if it's that big of a deal, they're going to call you anyway.
They're going to call me. Yes.
And then you could ignore that phone call.
And I would prefer
like
that.
Yeah. Earlier when it rang.
And I can ignore them then too. Yes.
But they left a message. So at least you'll get to it. Okay. So do you go to industry events?
I do. And you know what? The one that I'm looking forward to the most right now is called the Future of Events, which is going to be in Amsterdam in August. And it is the gentleman, Steve, who is running it. I met him in Manhattan specifically to talk about the conference. I'm speaking at it and doing a masterclass there. And he is really much like David Adler, was talking about trying to make event people rock stars. He's really trying to turn the concept of event conferences on its head and do things really differently and purposefully. And his bottom line is not about the revenue that it generates, but really the difference that the conference makes. And I'm super excited about that. And I'm also a huge advocate of Shauna's, Sukow's spin conferences, because she also, she'll make a list of here's everything that people expect at a conference. Now we can't do any of those things. And how do we completely redesign it to make it something that, you know, you haven't seen 100 times before. So anything that's...
very cool.
Yeah. What frustrates me is a lot of the larger... industry events, we all do what we do because we need to, well, most of us do what we do because we need to make enough money to survive. When the fact that this is about money shines through and, you know, it's just this blatant pitch to make money and it's not about the education or the industry, that frustrates me. And I my personal opinion is a lot of the larger event organizations are more about us giving them money than them giving us education. So Future of Events and SpinCon courses seem to kind of fly in the face of that, and I really respect that.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I like Shauna. She's a good
person. She's fabulous. She's fabulous.
I've had her on the show. I had her on like years ago on this show. I should have her on again.
Get her back, yeah. And she, David, and I are all going to be in Amsterdam.
What's Steve's last name? Who is Steve?
Steve, and you know what? I'm going to say, please forgive me, Steve, if I'm saying your last name wrong. Wickel, W-I-C-K-E-L-L. And the conference is Future of Events. It's in Amsterdam. And it's like he's got a night that's called, I'm not going to swear on your show, F up. Like, so if you F'd up, and it's to get all of some industry experts together in a room to talk about, like, here is my like most shameful moment in the industry and how badly I F'd up and what I did to fix it.
That's great.
It's great. And you know what? Anybody can get on a stage and say, I'm important, and these are the great things I've done. But you know what? I'm sitting in the audience feeling intimidated as it is. So why don't you tell me about your greatest screw up? Because that would be interesting. And that, like, that's an example of some of the stuff that he's doing. And what he's also doing, which is phenomenal, is your badge will have your name on it. It does not say if you're a buyer, a seller, what company you work for. Completely even playing field.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, it's spectacular. So I'm very excited about that one.
Very cool.
Yeah, yeah.
They used to have a conference here in San Francisco, probably other places, called FailCon, and it was the same thing. It was for startups, and you come in, and all the speakers were did the session on their failures.
Yeah.
How they failed.
Brilliant. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You learn from failing, right? That's
the main
way you learn. That's very cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so what else am I going to ask you? Where are we at? We've been talking for about 50 minutes. I don't know. You don't have to answer this, but what is the coolest new trend you have seen or excited about? That's always a hard one. Trend. I don't like the word trend. I should get rid of this question. But is there a trend you see that you are excited about? You don't have to answer it if you don't want to.
You know what? A trend, and I hope it's not a trend as much as it's a shift or an enhancement of the way we plan, is I just got asked to write an article that's coming out over the summer on active shooter training and emergency preparedness kind of on steroids. And I feel like that article, you can't consider me a party planner if I'm also telling you that I've just gotten certified in how to deal with an active shooter in a building. I'd like that people are starting to talk about that. I think it gives us credibility. I think that it gives us, it puts the onus on us to keep our skills, you know, truly to where they need to be. And it calls attention to something that's very real and that many of us read about in the paper, but don't think could happen to us. But any large gathering of people is a great place, you know, to have an unfortunate situation. Yeah. And I think that sometimes scare tactics work. So by reading that and saying, holy cow, like, what would I do in this situation? Well, you know what? Whereas in the real world, you know, you never know how you're going to react. At least get a little bit of training and think about it so that if it, God forbid, it ever happens to you, it's not a dress rehearsal and a dry run at the same time, or, you know, the real thing and a dress rehearsal at the same time.
Right. Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. It excites me in that it's important information and it means that people are starting to talk about things more than, do you prefer the macaroon craze or the, you know, cake pops? Because that makes us seem like airheads. So I'm excited that people are starting to talk about things that matter.
So cool. Okay, last question.
Yep.
What, if you could talk to the high school senior, Christy, what would you tell yourself?
Yeah, you know what? Don't get out of your own way. Just please don't take yourself so seriously. Take a chance, and fear is your worst enemy. And what I think I realize now is bravery is not the absence of fear. It's acting in spite of fear. And that the biggest risks are the biggest rewards.
Right.
And God, you know, again, Stephen Pressfield, it's so easy to rationalize not doing something. And, you know, nobody's ever died wishing they worked harder. So like, you know, just take the risk, and big risk, big reward.
Right.
Yeah.
So, have you returned to the Girl Scouts at all? Or
can I, 30-second story? Oh. I ended up getting hired by the Girl Scouts to run their annual conference. And can I? No, it's crazy. So I go through the whole conference, and I can't even begin to tell you the list of things that I witnessed. And at the end, when we did the wrap up, I sat in their meeting and I said, you know what? I got thrown out of the Girl Scouts when I was in, I don't know, fourth grade. And the women in this room were horrified. And I said, you know what? This wasn't a good fit then. And it's not a good fit now. You guys are crazy. I'm done. And I that was it. So I did return. And
so
then
you fired them.
I fired them this time. Nice. Yes. There's no Girl Scout in me.
What except a for great these. Ending to the podcast.
Isn't that hysterical?
Yeah, that's, yes. That's really funny.
It's closure. You start and you end with the same story. Well done, Mike.
Ah, it worked perfectly. I'm really good. No, I want to thank you, Christy. I really enjoyed talking to you, and I hope the audience will enjoy listening to us. Well, especially you, not me. They hear me all the time. But thank you so much for your time.
Oh, this was so much fun. Thank you.
Yeah, and I hope to get you back on again. We'll chat more and get you back on here. Hear what else you're up to.
I would love that.
Okay. Thank you so much. Oh, thank before you go, wait. How can people get a hold of you?
People can find me either at SME Christy, so Strategic Meetings and Events, SME Christy on Twitter. You can email me directly, Christy, Christy, .Lamagna, LAMAGNA, @ strategic, STRATEGIC, .events. There is no .com, it's just strategic.events. And if you didn't know that .events is out there, you should. I wrote an article about it on it. Go out and get the .events. Email because
that's a great idea. Yeah,
isn't it great? I'm one of the first ones to have it, and it's lonely out here all by myself. So everybody, go out and get a .events email.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, thanks, Christy.
Thank you, Mike, so much. I appreciate it.
Okay, bye. Okay, thank you, Christy. That was really fun talking with her. She is a hoot, and I wanted to thank the sponsors, Grashak Events and Media, and also the wonderful IMEX America. And if you have any questions or comments, email me at meetingspodcast@gmail.com. If there's somebody you'd like me to interview, I'd like to hear if people are enjoying the news, the meetings podcast news that we've been producing. And lastly, if you have a moment, head over to the iTunes and give us a review. I know it's difficult. As I've said in the past, you're probably walking somewhere or you're running or you're doing dishes or something, and you can't do it right now. But if you think of it later, it'd be great if you left a review on the iTunes for Meetings Podcast. And thank you for listening. Again, I really appreciate your time, and I will see you next time. Bye-bye.